Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
On a perfect day, I know that
it's Ryan Kelly Morning After, and this is 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. And the Gateway Buick GMC Studios today are at Wheelhouse downtown. And it is unbelievable because Bud Light and 590 The Fan are giving away bragging rights tickets just for you putting up the best Papa Shot score during each show between now and 3 p.m. So that means you have four chances to win. But, Doug, as we witnessed during the commercial break, there are some Papa Shot champions who are here and really putting on a display.
Well, I don't know how much of a display is being put on. It's a little harder than you think it's going to be.
Well, it's an unforgiving rim.
It's a tight rim. It's a tight, tight, tight rim.
Clipped it on.
It bounces off of there. I thought I'd try with the bank shot. I thought maybe that was the way to go. No, that wasn't the way to go at all.
A really nice score going, and when it goes down to 10 seconds, and when you're rewarded for being in shape, I think I went 1 of 10. I think I went 1 of 10.
So what was your number?
Clutch. 42. So 42 covered the over, and a lot of money came in late on the under. And I don't know if that motivated me. But then you sit there and you go, yeah, 42, but you go 1 of 10 from 3 with a real chance to get into the 50s, maybe 60s, an outlier performance, maybe 60s.
I think you're overthinking it now.
And you go, oh, you got 42, you left something on the table. It's like, yeah, great, I shot even today, but I missed 3 5-footers.
Never satisfied.
And I think that's what makes me so good.
Right. That's what your dad
can
says.
Can I tell you this? Just trust the process.
Nice.
You haven't done Papa Shot in a while. You listen to your coaches. You tuck your elbows in. You get a good shooting chamber going. You'll be in the 60s.
Nice.
You just keep saying trust the process, and it sounds like you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Even though you haven't laid out much
How
of
about
a process.
This? I thought about you last night because one of the coaches, as we're doing layup drills, I'm saying bank. You know, and you're close in. Use the backboard.
Oh,
backboard,
gosh,
bank
yeah, yeah.
And one of the coaches said, use the magic square. Have you ever heard that? The magic square.
I've never heard it called the magic square, no.
Because that little square in the backboard. That's
right,
where
I know what you're talking about. I just have never
It sounded
it
like something you would
square.
Say, and I was like, where's Doug?
I kind of like it, yeah. You going to use that a lot now? Trust the process. Follow the magic square.
Yeah.
Tim, I won a game of Papa Shot to Doug's picture at 4:30 this morning. Think about it, Doug. That's from Caitlyn Jenner's purse.
I don't know what that means. Someone's practicing to come up trying to win some tickets, I guess.
And they were using you as an inspiration because you played on a very good Kirkwood team.
Couple of good Kirkwood teams.
Couple.
Yeah, I could see where that would really motivate you.
Boys were down there during the break asking you about your time at Kirkwood, And you were the best sixth man in the state, am I right?
No, that would not be correct at all. I was hardly the best sixth man at Kirkwood.
You played a lot, though.
About 22 minutes.
Senior year, I played a lot.
On
junior,
a good team.
Not so much.
And you lost to Raymore Peculiar?
No. My sophomore year, we lost to Raytown South.
Was it
Anthony Peel?
My role was on the sophomore team.
Oh, Javon Crudup.
The junior year, we lost to DeSmet by 4 points in the state championship.
And what was your line score in that?
I would have been sat on the bench.
You didn't up DNP?
We had like three guys that played Division I hoops on that team.
But I'm asking, DNP did not play?
That's correct.
4 points?
That's correct. I had the best seat in the house.
All right, senior. What?
Senior year, I played, but we didn't make it to the state.
Where'd you get knocked out, bro?
Like the quarterfinals or something. I think it was Northwest.
Do you think it was guys not trusting the process?
Yeah.
I mean, when you look back on it now,
that's
with
exactly
wisdom,
what I think now.
Did you ignore the magic square, bro?
I probably did.
Yep.
How many points a game did you average back then? How
12
many boards?
12.2, three rebounds.
44, 45 points a game, I think.
Pretty good.
Oh, that was before the 3 points.
That's very Maravich-esque.
Yeah. Boy, if that we had a 3-point line, you know, maybe that's 70 points a game. I don't know.
About 20 boards a game.
White Collar Gangster is down there right now, and he is on a – this. You can tell he played at Syracuse.
He is on
a mission.
He's what, 5'10", 150 pounds? You think he played at Syracuse, dude?
Sherman Douglas.
Okay.
this white-collar gangster is damn good. I can't wait to hear his number from Danny Packer. This is something going on. And he just did a fadeaway on his final shot. Yeah. There was a defender in his face.
And he's following through like that's going to matter. Stop it, gangster.
He's got a good shooting.
What's his point total, boys?
Wow. Oh!
And you're going to look back. Let's take a look, if we could, if we can cue it up in the truck. Let's take a look at the final five shots because, as you know now, he had 66, and all he needed was to hit two of those final five shots to get himself some bragging rights tickets. And instead,
he did the fadeaway jumper, going for style points.
Instead, when it was on the line,
the record's 68. Is that it?
Yeah.
And he had 66.
He's up here yelling at you now.
Well, we did see him go for style points right there at the end.
And you think the style over substance cost him?
Yeah, he did some sort of fadeaway leaper.
Let me ask you this. You played at Kirkwood. How aware do you have to be of the clock? Because that can be a distraction and get you out of your rhythm. But you have to be aware, especially when
Is it good to have your trainer with you saying, okay, five, you know, to let you know?
We had no shot clock back then. We were just lucky to have electricity. Are you kidding me?
What about in this pop-up shot, though? Should you bring a coach to keep you updated on the time?
I don't
time.
Think you need a coach, no. I think you can handle a little something by yourself.
I would bring a coach and also a brow mopper.
See ya.
See white collar gangster.
See ya.
That's the gentleman lover of townie.
I think he made gang signs as he left.
Well, I mean,
like
he's going to
get me in my car or something. Well, that's disappointing because those tickets are nice.
Yeah, you're about to go see Missouri play Illinois.
They're coveted ducats.
And you're sitting with 66 with about, I don't know, 5-6 seconds left. All you need to do is hit two shots, and you miss all five.
Mm-hmm.
And then for whatever reason, as if Dikembe Mutombo's in your face, you fade away into the bar at Wheelhouse.
Right. Well, there's a word for that. It's called choking. He had it right there. It was right there on the gift wrap for him, set up on the tee, and he choked it.
Mm.
Choked it away.
It's a good score, though.
Well, it's not good
it's
enough.
It's a good score.
It? Not good enough, though, is it?
Boy, you are a rugged guy.
Maybe it'll be good enough on somebody else's time slot, one of the other day parts. But not in the morning. That's not going to cut it.
It's going to have a 7 in front of it because of our audience, very athletic.
Long and lean, a lot of these fellas.
Well, we train with them, you know.
I've noticed their fast twitch muscles.
Guys, the white-collar gangster is a fraud. Thanks, Crystal City Clam Hammer.
All right, Clammy.
Why would he say that?
Maybe he knows him.
Doug, which was more fun, the state championship games or your father-son dances at Kirkwood?
We
Thanks.
Didn't have father-son dances. I didn't go to any dances at Kirkwood. I never you went
didn't?
To one. No.
What?
I never went to one of them.
Not a prom?
Nope.
Why not, bro?
Mm-mm. I didn't have a girlfriend. I don't know. I just didn't. Just didn't go.
Didn't your buddies go? See, even if you didn't have a girlfriend, you picked one of the ladies
not.
Who had their eyes on you. You made her day. You ask her, and next thing you know, you're at the prom having a good old time.
Most of them didn't go, I don't think.
Really?
Huh. Mm-mm. It just didn't seem like it was a big deal.
Really?
Mm-mm.
Ours was big at the old Nyack High School. That was big.
How many kids were in your graduating class, the cat, at Nyack?
I think it was something like 160 or something.
Oh, Kirk
about 650.
Holy moly.
Maybe.
A lot of ladies to choose from, Doug. A lot of disappointed ladies, I'll bet. Never got
who
the
had,
ask.
Who had no interest in me. I couldn't get a date in a women's
you
prison.
You were a star
a
on the basketball team.
With a fistful of pardons.
Well, look at you now.
Yeah. No, I never went to any of that stuff. I regret that I didn't.
Prom was fun. Everyone
sure was. Yeah.
Regrets. I've had a few. Is that what you're thinking right now?
I don't really think about it a lot now. It was like 40 years ago.
So who was the one little lady you were thinking of asking? What's her name? Let's find out where she is now and get her on the phone.
Yeah, we had to get her on before Derek Gould.
Yeah, there were no little ladies that I was thinking about asking. I was too nervous back then to do it anyway.
I'll bet her name was Bernice back then.
No, there's no Bernices.
I could see that.
Mm-mm. No.
She wore the cowl neck and drove you crazy.
Oh, well, I don't remember anyone named Bernice.
Danny Packer, what's the leading number right now?
I believe it's 63.
63?
I thought it was 68.
We just saw the white collar gangster get 66. Oh, so you shoot three times. Oh.
What, did the white collar gangster know that?
No, he did. He shot three times. I think
it's 55. Say it in the mic. We can't hear
you. Why are
you
yelling at Danny Packer? He loves America.
Now turn the mic on.
Seymour's not
Where'd
here.
Where'd he go?
He's with Iggy.
What's he shooting? Seymour, where'd you go? Okay, grab Seymour's mic. We can't have a discussion here when you and can't hear you. And be slow about it. Come on, chop, chop. That mic's not working either. Seymour was outside.
Is he smoking a heater?
I don't know. Well, never mind. It's just the only reason we're here.
I think I can call for audio because that can be done back in the Kirkwood World headquarters. Plowhawk, is that correct?
Word up, G, give it to me. What do you need?
I would like to hear the Dan Lebatard, Commissioner Rob Manfred interview from yesterday's ESPN radio.
You got it, buddy.
Okay.
Rob, were you aware of Jeter's plan to trade players and / payroll?
You know, it's interesting.
Yes or no,
we
please?
Don't.
Yes or no, please?
I'm happy to do yes or no's.
You can elaborate afterward. I just want to know if you were aware of that plan. Like, did you approve a plan that had / payroll again for South Florida?
We do not approve operating decisions by any ownership,
new owners,
current owners or not.
Rob.
And as a result, the answer to that question is no. I'm not going to be deposed like this is some adversary thing. You want to ask me questions, I'll answer them the way that I want to answer them.
Okay,
but if that's not good enough, we can move on.
No, that's fine. I'll do it that way. But you can't come. You're coming on here and saying that you weren't aware of Jeter's plan to trade players and / payroll. Like, we're starting with a lie, Rob. Like, that's where we're starting. Like, you can't tell me you're not aware of that.
I'm not going to sit here and have you call me a liar. I explained to you that we do not get involved in operating level decisions in the ownership process, the ownership approval process. Clubs make those local decisions.
Rob, were you aware of his plan, though? Were you aware of it?
No. We did not have player-specific plans from the Miami Marlins or any other team
plan
we approve in the ownership process. Those are decisions that the individual owners make, and they do not have to be cleared with us. We don't approve, dictate, or necessarily ask clubs what they're going to do with respect to their individual operations. Those are local decisions.
And
faded it out right there.
But that's Commissioner Rob Manfred and Dan Lebatard. Now, after that interview, which, of course, received a lot of attention in its aftermath, a reporter for the Miami Herald, citing two sources, said that everyone in baseball, every owner in baseball, and of course including Major League Baseball, was made aware of the fact that the Marlins were going to cut their payroll from what it would be with Stanton, with Ozuna, with D. Gordon. Who else has been shipped? Am I missing people? There may be more, but either way, already it would be at $140 million if all those guys were kept this year. They were going to reduce it to 85 to 90 on the low end and 95 on the high end. Now, ironically, we are at Wheelhouse downtown St. Louis for the Papa Shot tournament for bragging rights tickets presented by Bud Light and 590 The Fan. And this is where, when I was hosting the show with Jim Edmonds and TJ Moe in October of 2014, I had Kevin Demoff on. And I asked him, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't know the exact words from memory, although I have a feeling they're going to be played in a deposition, the question of, has anyone associated with the Rams had any conversations with any other market about relocating the franchise to that market? It was a broad, all-encompassing, casting a wide net, so to speak, question, so as to have him on the record answering yes or no. Had I, and don't get me wrong, as a St. Louisan, but also a fan, but a St. Louisan, but a talk show host, I'm not happy about the situation. But my goal in doing that interview was to get answers and to get it on the record. And from my standpoint, the minute, had I said to Kevin, and he's elaborating or explaining or double-talking, whichever term you would want to use, that is where There Is No Secret Plan came from, I believe, by the way. Buck Swope, God bless him. It is Seamaster. You were producing. You would know. So you immediately make the interview confrontational, contentious. The guest is on the defensive. And then also, part of what you're doing is, in my opinion at least, seeking answers. And now it becomes a sideshow, and actually getting answers becomes either intentionally or unintentionally secondary. Now, doing one of those things will oftentimes lead to short-term compliments and praise, because it's just human nature for some to like hearing a person they perceive to be omnipotent exposed, and it's good to see the man taken down. But in my opinion, you don't actually get long-term reward, because now you've screamed at a guy and not actually gotten answers. So I said last night when we were discussing this on the TMA fan page on Facebook that an interviewer, in a one-on-one interview, not like what would be on this show unless we went in saying, because on that show, for example, I told Jim Edmonds and TJ Moe, I said, I want to handle this interview one-on-one because I have a line of questioning and I want to stick to the line of questioning. You have a plan, and the plan is how you're going to conduct the interview. And I don't want to say, and so I want to make this clear, none of this has to do with not liking Dan Le Batard or liking Dan Le Batard. As I said on the fan page, he's living in Miami, and I would imagine he's making seven figures plus, so he's winning. But I don't feel like that was the tactic that was going to get answers. I feel like it was intentionally contentious slash confrontational, and within 30 seconds you're saying yes or no, yes or no. It becomes more of a show than an actual interview. There is my official position on that interview.
I thought he was just rude. It was just a rude way to talk to anybody. I thought he was totally out of line with that. I would support the commissioner on that. And even if he did know, what difference does it make? Marlins aren't the first team to sell off their high-priced veterans to start rebuilding. The Cubs did it and won a World Series that way. The Astros did it and won a World Series that way. The Phillies are in the process of doing that. The A's seem to be perpetually in that process. So what if they did? He's a Marlins fan in Miami, and he's upset that the Marlins have traded their top players. That's been done many times before in baseball. Whether the commissioner knew they were going to do that or not, I don't see that it's a big deal.
Well, what the issue that Le Batard had a problem with, and again, and here's the core thing. There's a huge story here in the sense that Manfred came on and said he did not know. Then immediately after the interview, a reporter with the Miami Herald tweets out from two sources that he did know. But how many people are actually talking about that? Now, you can say, as you just said, it's not a big deal. And maybe it's not. I don't know what the rules are. His whole point is we don't localize each team's plan and then make a decision on who's going to get a franchise based on that. But if you do have the commissioner of baseball on the record being dishonest, that's a story. That's a real issue. And that would further irritate a fan base that isn't particularly large anyway and feels like it has been wronged, not necessarily because of the manner with which the franchise is operated, in particular following the 97 World Championship and 2003 World Championship, but I think at the most, the way that the legislation was forced through and the public feels like it was duped to build that new ballpark near Little Havana. So that is the core. But what are most people talking about? They're talking about the behavior of Dan Le Batard in the interview. And so that's why I go back to now again, and Le Batard gets praised on social media by a lot of people, and they're like, good for you for going after him. But what was accomplished there? Now, as I said also, he's the one living in South Florida making, I would imagine, $1 million plus, maybe $2 million plus. And I'm here listening to Dan Packer conduct what looks like a pretty strong round of Papa Shot.
Mm-hmm.
So either
we do have donuts, so.
Oh, yeah, I've neglected to mention that. Yeah. So he is either consciously performing a winning strategy or I am wrong. But my point is when I have somebody on, now could I have Kevin Demoff on and dressed him down and be, good job, Tim, that was awesome. But then it's a host screaming at somebody, or as you called it, being rude, and it becomes a sideshow as opposed to actually calmly attempting to get answers where you can put somebody on the spot, but not do so in a manner in which you're screaming. I cited, you know, in 12 years of Inside STL, we've only had to sue two clients for not paying, which is kind of amazing. Mm. And one of them flat out told our salesperson, I'm not paying, sue me. So we did. You want us to sue you? We will. And then he walks into the courtroom. This was maybe, 6 years ago, and the judge hadn't entered yet. And he comes in, he's kind of got a couple henchmen. He goes, I'm going to counter-sue you. So he's being tough and cool. And the courtroom just going, okay, we got this going on today. And then my attorney, just in a calm, monotone, absolute dissection of this gentleman, destroys him in cross-examination. I mean, it wasn't a difficult trial. We had a signed contract, proof of performance, and he just wasn't going to pay. And because he started getting irritated by how calm my attorney was, the judge then scolds him for his behavior on the stand. My attorney continues his calm dissection. I mean, it's almost like whispering. It was so just like gangster. And the judge scolds the guy again, the witness again, and we won. It was a layup situation. What I am saying is if your goal is to actually win, if your goal is to actually get the answers, if you're confident of your position, calling someone a liar, I don't care if it's a guy calling into a show or if it's the commissioner of baseball, and saying yes or no, that's not how you're going to accomplish it. But like I said, you'll get a lot of likes on Facebook, and if you can monetize that, I suppose you can live in South Florida and make millions of dollars. It's just not the strategy I personally would employ. Maybe I'm wrong.
The point is there's other ways to try to get to the same information without being rude. And if you're looking for a tell, jumping on the guy yes or no right away before he even really gives his answer shows that was the direction that he had planned to go in. You can follow up and you can try to pin him down on an answer without calling him a liar or, you know, jumping in on the guy before he's able to fully give his first answer. So it's clear that was the direction he wanted to go in anyway.
Yeah, I don't know how Rob Manfred is the bad guy in any of this anyway. I mean, what did he do? This group stepped forward to buy the franchise that can't draw flies to their games with a huge payroll. Wouldn't you expect somebody to come in and make a lot of changes? Whether they do or whether they don't, that's not the commissioner's fault.
Well, the fan base in Miami,
on the defensive?
Which isn't very big anyway. I mean, what they've been through, and they had a lot of them feel they were built. They were. I mean, they got with the whole stadium and the dismantling of team after team. They've been through an awful lot. I could see someone from that area being upset with what's happening.
If they even care, and you're right. I mean, it's just we had, David Sampson, the former Marlins president, on last week. It's just not, I mean, if you took the 3 million people in the St. Louis area and transported them to Miami, you probably wouldn't care as much about if the Cardinals were down there, the Cardinals. It's not, there's a whole lot going on. There's so much close, too, relatively speaking. You'd be on the Gulf side in 2 hours. And
people don't live there. I mean, they're transplants.
Yeah,
so,
so many people who grow up here and live here, and therefore baseball becomes part of their lives. The Blues become part of their lives. God bless, to each their own. Some people like things. Some people like other things.
Don't like other things.
But what the contention is from Lebatard is they were duped on the stadium. And I think he has a legitimate contention there.
They were.
The core issue is what he is saying is they knew that this is the direction the Marlins were going to go, and they approved Jeter's group, even though it's not Jeter, he's the front man, earlier this year. And how could they do that? And Manfred saying he did not know, nor do they know what each franchise is going to do case by case. I mean, hell, the Cardinals might have had an absolute 100% plan to get Giancarlo Stanton. Well, if Stanton don't want to come, he didn't come. So now that you have a plan B. So there's that part of it, and then there's also the manner with which the interview is conducted. And I just, like I said, I could be wrong. This isn't saying he's wrong, and I don't like Dan Lebatard. I felt like I watched it because I saw it getting a bunch of praise on social media, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to watch this. I watched it, and I'm like, you know, you're going in right away. You go, yes or no? Yes or no? It sounded like a deposition. It sounded like somebody in cross examination, and you can conduct that in a way.
Sure.
That try to get to the answers.
Same direction.
And as long as you maintain calm, if anything, that then becomes frustrating to the person you are, the quote unquote witness, or in this case, the interviewee. We're going to be joined by Derek Gould here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines as we broadcast live from Wheelhouse, downtown St. Louis. Still 90 minutes to combine, play Papa Shot, and whoever gets the best score, wins two tickets to the Bragging Rights game, and then, Doug, at 10 o'clock, a whole new game starts up for the Hollywood Casino Press Box.
Right.
And then at noon, a whole new game starts up for the Midday Grind, and then at 1, a whole new game starts up for the Hardline.
Okay.
Well, I'm explaining it to the
listeners.
The
different day parts.
Well, right. We have the athletes, so the score is going to be higher.
Yeah, our listeners are long and lean, and average household income of our audience, $375,000.
I checked. It's $395 since
last
week. Yeah,
somebody must have gotten Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Joining us right now on the Appliances Counter phone lines, ladies and gentlemen, Derek Gould. Hello, Derek.
Hello, Gouldy.
Hello, guys. Gould. Hey, the fallout from that Levitard thing, can Meat Shield become part of our lexicon?
You know what? I don't think we included the part where he does say Meat Shield, but didn't he say, is Derek Jeter a Meat Shield?
Yeah. Yeah, that's he asked.
Doug, you like that term?
I don't mind it.
Meat shield.
Yeah. Isn't Jeter the one that you would put on the stand there if you're going to cross-examine somebody or the other owner? They're the ones that made the move.
See, here's the thing, though, and I do understand this. To me, there's really two points. One is that the former Marlins ownership and management deserves some blame because they signed some really bad contracts.
Yeah, I would say that's where the blame belongs.
Right, that's not sustainable. However, if the Jeter group was approved and then they immediately come out and say they're looking for another investor with $250 million, I think it's a legitimate question to say, hey, could you have found an ownership group that had deeper pockets to better handle the situation that the team is in now? You don't have to yell about it, but I think that's a rational question to ask. Do you agree with any of that, Derek?
I do. I think it's a fair question. Did you want Jeter to be an owner, or did you want someone who actually had the money to own a team? I think that's a fair question.
And did they have other people?
That was actually a question during the bidding process was, you know, when Jeb Bush and some of these other ownership groups, off the top of my head, I can't. There was a gentleman whose name escapes me, but the New York Times did a big story about him. He lives down there in Miami and has a great coffer of riches from which to buy a team. But didn't have Jeter's as part of his ownership group. So I think that's a fair question. And it's one that, to be candid, Miami's been asking.
And then, you know, the truth is if you had an ownership group with deeper pockets, obviously they would have to make changes, but maybe they wouldn't be as drastic so as to have a totally stripped-down team for the fans that, to some extent, have supported this team. But, again, Derek, that's sort of the model we've seen other teams do it. You start from zero in some cases, and that's painful for the fan base, but sometimes a team finds itself with no other options. But again, if you had an ownership group that had more wealth, they would be able to absorb some of that and do it more gradually, correct?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right, is usually it's a slow bleed. It's veterans traded during the season. You know, I think it's hard to imagine – to be quite honest, any new ownership not moving Stanton. Like that's hard to think of. Like, what ownership group would come in and say, yes, we want our product. We want to already owe $300 million on our product. I mean, that's the one move that is likely to happen with almost every new ownership, or at least try to happen. But like the Ozuna trade, some of these other trades that are happening, I don't think you'd see that. You'd see that slow bleed over time.
And anyone who would stand in front of Stanton and say he shouldn't be traded is more or less a meat shield.
Nice.
Well, that's an appropriate usage of that term. Great. Cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well
thank
done,
you,
Doug.
All right. Thank you.
Derek, would you describe things with the Cardinals right now as all quiet on the Western front?
For the Cardinals, right?
Okay. Nice.
I don't know if it's all – I doubt it's all – well, it's not all quiet. I mean, they still talk to trade options. They still are in touch with agents and everything like that. That's kind of how this goes. But, you know, as the holiday approaches, the Cardinals are – and they're not alone in this, but they're one of the teams that goes, all right, you know, we know where we're at Christmas. Let's take a week and let's revisit some of these things and work towards deals after the new year. You know, they close the office for the week. Again, they're not alone in this, and sort of pick things up after Christmas. Now, if there's some kind of urgency, or if there's a free agent that says, "Well, I'm going to sign afterwards," then they'll do the work and make the bid. But for the most part, once you get closer to Christmas, like in this area through the new year, they're not looking to seal a deal. They're looking to prepare to make a deal after the new year.
They have their phones, so though. They all have their
phone.
Yeah. That's the way John – and he seemed rather optimistic that that the work was not yet done, that they still have some moves to make. Are you surprised how quiet it's been? Because I think a lot of folks felt once the Stanton thing worked itself out, then the rest of the dominoes would start falling, and we've only seen a couple of dominoes fall, really.
Oh, you mean in the market total?
Yeah. Yeah.
I am not, and I will give you – can I give you two words why?
Two words, no more than two.
Okay, I have two. Are you ready for them? Okay. It's not Meat Shield, though. Scott Boras. All right, that's it. Those are my two words, Scott Boras.
Because he has all the cards, and he will play them when he feels it's appropriate, correct?
He has an enormous amount of free agents. When you look at the list of the free agents available, especially some of the top-end guys like a J.D. Martinez, and even like a Jake Arrieta, you can go through Greg Holland. These are his clients. And as you look through, he slow plays the market all the time. And now he's in control of different elements of the market to the point that some of the teams that are interested in free agents that Scott Boras represents, if you reading reports and hearing from people who expect moves, you have some teams that want the free agent, and if they don't sign the free agent, then might be moved to trade guys. So it's Boras has a hold on both of those things because of the number of clients he has.
Huh. Is that good for baseball for one agent to have that much power? I guess there's no way around it at the moment.
That's an interesting question, Doug. I hadn't thought about it. I don't think it's bad for baseball. Is it good? Actually, I think it is good. I think it is good for baseball, and I'll tell you why. I think it's good because owners are getting huge revenue. Owners are getting these large checks from the sale of Major League Baseball Advanced Media. The Cardinals' revenue for the rights fees is about to jump $20 million in 1 year. I think this goes back to what we're talking about with the Marlins. Owners are getting huge checks. It's almost like they're not quite at the NFL, but remember the NFL gets such a check from its rights fees that it doesn't have to sell a ticket to be profitable with the hard cap on its salaries. Well, baseball doesn't have a hard cap, but baseball does have a luxury tax, which is acting as that. I mean, look at the moves that the Yankees and that the Dodgers recently made. Look at the particularly the trade with Atlanta that the Dodgers made. So you have these teams scrambling to get under this luxury tax, and I think it's a good thing that there is a savvy agent who is well-versed in how to use statistics against teams and present his players as world beaters, whether they all are or not, and maintains the balance of revenue. And I think, for an agent who somewhat has a star quality so that he can have a press conference and people flock, or a press gathering and people flock to it, and he can sit there and say that the Marlins have become a pawn shop, or that the Mets only shop in the clearance aisle. These are important things for baseball. Yes, I think it's good to have Scott Boras on the wall for the players.
Let me ask you this about the Cardinals' rotation, Derek. They seem very confident that they have enough depth there. But with the discussion of Anthony Reyes, obviously they'll have to – watch his innings. There's been some discussion from
Alex Reyes.
Mike,
right?
I'm sorry.
Alex.
Yeah, right.
Anthony's a fireman now in California.
Alex Reyes. He was, on my mind because of the story. He was out there fighting fires.
But
John Mozeliak had said that Alex Reyes could end up in the bullpen to start the season. Mm-hmm. Mike Matheny said the same thing. They haven't figured that out yet. But if that's the case, and they got to watch his innings anyway, I think it's a fair assessment that maybe they need some help for that rotation. How do you see it?
I agree. I think they do need. They could benefit from the addition of a new starter. I mean, look at it this way, right? When you look at the rotation from last year, it finished with Luke Weaver in it, right? And Luke Weaver kind of replaced Mike Leake. Now you have Miles Michaelis to replace Lance Lynn. Is that enough? Is that enough support? Is that enough insurance to just maintain what they had, or are they out to improve what they had? Or do they even have enough to cover the innings that they need? And those are real questions for them. You know, they can – one of the things about saying that they're confident now, is they can say that because there are so many pitchers still left on the market. I mean, what starter has moved? Tyler Chatwood, right? I mean, you can go through the list of free agent pitchers and still find 3, 4, 5 that would satisfy what the Cardinals need. Are probably short-term contracts when you think about it, which is what they would prefer, and also, you know, are going to still be available in January. It's been a weird thing. The Cardinals kind of adopt the approach that there's always pitching. That's the Kyle Loesch maneuver, I guess, who they added in the middle of March. And, you know, I don't think this is any different. You know, they have an interest in adding a starter. I think it's real interesting, and maybe if I can throw a question back to you guys, it's real interesting when you rank the priorities. Like, what should be their priority? Should they focus their resources on getting a closer? Should they focus their resources on getting a second bat? Should they focus their resources on getting this additional starter? And if you start doing that powering, I think you get different answers from different people. But there is enough out there in the marketplace for them to do all of those things.
I think you'd probably have to do all those things if you think you're going to try to be better than the Cubs. I think it would take all that. I have a question. If they've got all this money and they still need pitching, why haven't they shown more interest in Lance Lynn? Is it just too expensive?
It's a good question. I mean, I think they just don't see I think there are two elements of this. One is the asking price and the number of years. They just are like, all right, well, we can find – better value elsewhere. I'll say three things. That's first. Second is they want to bring up some of the young guys, and the length that Lynn is looking for also would inhibit that. That's one that you could probably argue. And then third, you know, we see this with the Cardinals every so often where they just want a change. And so they use the expiration of a contract to force that change upon the roster, to create some kind of Mo calls it natural churn. And they don't have to do anything. You know, they don't have to non-tender a guy. They don't have to release a guy. They just have to say thanks for your time and good luck in free agency. And we know there's going to be a change as a result of it. You know, Matt Holliday was an example of that. And Lance Lynn seems to be this year's example of that. Just the guy that they say thanks for the time and, you know, good luck in free agency. You're going to get more there than we're willing to offer or hope you do. And we'll take the draft pick, but we also just want the change.
Here's what I believe and what I've been told is the reason of their lack of interest in Lance Lynn, and it's this simple. They believe that their young pitchers may not be – that rotation may not be as they hope it will be this year, but possibly next year. And they're quite confident by the year after that all these guys will be bona fide. So their thinking
from a financial
standpoint is, why would they pay a premium for a long period of time for a guy who they don't think they're going to need what he does over that full range of, you know, of years? Yeah. So, and that would be a premium price. To me, you know, that's their reasoning in a nutshell, right or wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I think the compare, that's the part that I was talking about where they block guys. That's the arguable part, right? You know, I mean, if you have Lance Lynn for 5 years, are you telling me you can't find a spot for him? Because, you know, Miles Michaelis is gone after two. This is the last year of Adam Wainwright's deal. You know, Michael Wacha's a free agent after two. Now all of a sudden, you know, you're down three guys, and Lance Lynn signed for 3 years beyond that. It's not so bad all of a sudden. So I think that point can be argued, but it is their stance, and, you know, they look at it. That's why they find the 2 years for Michaelis to be so appealing. That's why if they can find another pitcher for 2 years, maybe 2 years in an option, they find it so appealing because, you know, they just they, they want to make the move where they are getting to their younger guys, and they're building their rotation around Martinez. They're building their rotation around Reyes, and they're not having, and this is the, maybe the best comparison, is they're not having Lance Lynn, in like Mike Leake, and a few years in going, all right, well, we got to trade him and stomach some of that cost.
Yeah, I guess the tricky part is finding that guy for 2 years who's going to be anywhere near as good as Lance Lynn. That's the hard part.
Well, I mean, they've kind of bet that Miles Michaelis will be that guy.
Yeah. But we don't know if he's how that will work out. Hopefully
no,
it does.
But
Lance Lynn's a pretty good pitcher.
No, he's a very good pitcher.
He's a very good pitcher.
I agree with everything Derek said, because pitching is so important, and you kind of know what you're going to get from Lance Lynn. He just came off the surgery. He's good. I expect he'll be better this year. You know what you're going to get usually for an extended period. So why not do it? But I'm just telling you how the Cardinals look at it in terms of how they want to spend their money.
And I think it can be argued that the holes that they are concerned about will be filled by young players, and Lance Lynn would still have a fit, which makes me think that behind the curtain of their comments, you know, there's the notion that it's just time to change.
All right. So, any idea what they might do next? Are you hearing anything at all, or are you just waiting for the calendar to turn over when they might get back to business?
Well, I mean, those are two. I mean, it's more of the same, right? I mean, they talk to free agent relievers. They, you know, I haven't heard any waning interest in some of the guys who we've talked about a lot this winter that they have. I know that to the point about the starting pitching, you know, that they have a good sense of, you know, who is the value play in that starting group. I'm not sure that they've, you know, had much talks about them, but they're waiting, and they keep in touch with agents, and those good. You know, the conversations with Toronto, I get the sense that, you know, Toronto has some moves that they want to make. If they can pull those off, then maybe they think they're better. If they can't, then, you know, maybe they come to reality and move a Donaldson. The Cardinals want to be there waiting for that conversation, have been trying to have that conversation. Well, they've had that conversation, but have been trying to, you know, make that appealing to the Jays. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that they're doing, but it's more of the same of what we talked about.
I would like to see the Cardinals get another bat. I would like to see them get that other bullpen piece, and I do think they're in need of a starter.
I
honestly believe them when they say their work is not done. I don't know if they're going to accomplish.
Yeah, no, I don't think
everything,
they are,
but they're still in there. They always say opening day for them, marking the end of the trade period is, and then sometimes they go beyond. But they have a lot of time before the first day of spring training, so they have time to try to get some stuff done. And it's not like the free agent market has been going crazy right now. It's, what do you say, all quiet on the Western Front.
Except for the meat shields that keep popping up everywhere.
Well, that's right. Derek, we always enjoy the conversation,
that is
sir.
A very literary reference there, Doug.
This show is sophisticated, and that's why we're in serious talks with NPR, and we'll see if it happens.
Awesome.
I don't know.
All
quiet
have to talk on the quieter. Got to be honest, one of the classics that I read that just did not connect with me.
Oh, wow.
Very
good. What's a classic that did not connect with you? Catcher in the Rye?
I had to read Silas Marner. Silas Marner, that was the most boring book I've ever read in my life. Mm. Required reading at Kirkwood High years ago.
Wow, with it a,
just
with
didn't
a
connect
title
with
like
me.
That, I'm shocked.
You know, you never heard of that book, Silas Marner?
I've heard of it, but man, needs
you
a
didn't
verb.
Miss anything. Yeah. Well, that was the guy's name.
No, I know. But what's he do?
He just hangs out. He didn't do much. That's what made the book so boring.
It's a shot at my weekends.
Wasn't that funny, Derek? I think that was a Lemmy laugh.
No, it was not.
Okay.
Derek and I did a wonderful podcast.
Did you?
We did. I enjoy our podcasts.
Yeah, I do too. I enjoy the conversations. Yeah.
And they put it
up on the... I think I would have worn a different outfit if I knew I was going to be on video or comb my hair a little differently. But, yeah, no, I'm good. That was, it was a that really
What were you
genuine...
wearing, Derek?
Doug. What's that?
What were you wearing?
I was wearing my my campus hoodie, you know, just kind of as if I were still 22 years old walking around campus.
Yeah.
also a shot at me.
You know, okay. Derek, you looked fine in our Fox Sports Midwest thing, but we used some of your comments on the whole winter meetings deal. But then I noticed I got a tweet from Ben Fred if we used you coughing and sneezing. I wanted you to know that while you were sick, I was a little sick, not to the level that you were at the winter meetings, and I came on my own show trying to battle through it, and I was immediately attacked for coughing and trying to get a drink of water in the middle of the interview. Mm-hmm. I just wanted you to know that.
Are you feeling better?
Yeah, I never got the full dose of it. I kind of was on the fringe and then got better, and I'm hoping I stay off it. But you're fully recovered, correct?
It's amazing. I leave the winter meetings, I get healthy. I go to the winter meetings, I get the winter meetings flu. It's amazing.
Well, it's because you're stuck in a room of ball writers that are all diseased.
Oh, I didn't know they were all diseased.
That's not true at all.
I didn't know that at all, Doug.
That wasn't a lemming laugh, was it?
No, that was legit.
I think that was legit.
He's concerned, if anything. There's illness. Airborne virus, Doug?
Among the scribes.
And John Mozeliak was torturing Derek about it, too.
I did ask, did you use the part in the thing where I asked him, where, Mo, I'm really having a hard time figuring out if you're concerned or critical of how I treat my health? Like cross the line.
Where cutting room. That was anymore. Cutting room floor. We only had 30 minutes, so we left.
He insisted that he was concerned for my health. He did insist, but I did wonder.
Yeah, because he seemed outraged that you would show up in the little media scrum infirmed. He did seem outraged by that.
Thought he might make everyone else sick.
Yes, that's what he was concerned. Okay. Well, Derek, really I'm glad you're better, and always a pleasure to catch up with you, our friend on the show.
That's right. That's right.
Thank you, guys. Happy holidays to all.
Happy holidays to yours, Derek Gould, here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After, joining us on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Well, Doug, that ruckus you hear in the background is a power top taking it to a willing bottom, but also Papa Shot going on here at Wheelhouse in downtown St. Louis, as gentlemen and numerous 25-year-old bi-curious women have gathered to compete for Bragging Rights tickets.
I don't see any bi-curious women. I don't see any women.
They're ghosts.
Right. That guy, I guess he could be a lady.
Yeah, I could see that.
Hello, sir. You're a gentleman, aren't you?
Gender neutral?
Yes.
All right.
Now, Danny Packard came by, but Doug, you were mad because you couldn't hear him.
Right.
And that's because the Sea Monster was out.
Where were you?
And Doug was mad at the Sea Monster. Let me tell you something. Before he even answers, whatever he was doing, it was for the good of the show and the radio station, and I know that.
Where were you, Sneaky V?
I was putting money in the parking meter.
Oh, that's for the good of the show.
Yeah. For the good of the
show. God, you think they're out there ticketing?
I tend to get a lot of tickets when we do events downtown.
I guess I got to run out there at 9 o'clock.
I just paid in a lot.
I did, too.
But I parked on the street, baby.
All right, baby.
you've come a long way, baby. Who is that, Telly Savalas?
Get where you got it's
Virginia
you
Slim
today.
Cigarettes. You got your you own got cancer-causing habit, baby.
They actually
come
advertised a carcinogen.
Come a long, long
yes.
way.
Uh-huh. So now you can smoke.
This is
that's how liberated we were in the 70s. We're going to let you smoke a cigarette.
We'll
now.
Go back down there for more Papa Shot, but whoever does the best in our show, in the press box, in the midday grind, in the hard line, each show has a champion, and each show wins Bragging Rights tickets presented by Bud Light. We're at Wheelhouse downtown. Come on by. Why not start your holidays early by having a nip of the cooking sherry, maybe a little nog, and playing Papa Shot all day, Doug? I can't imagine our audience can get away from work, but if they can, come on down.
Oh, speaking of nog, we have a wonderful clip we can play next hour of a very famous person taking a very firm stance on eggnog.
Ooh. Doug, call me curious. We're getting better at teasing. You can't say we're not. This is the Ryan Kelly Morning.